If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Don't be afraid to partner. I see a lot of people that try to get in the industry and they want to do everything themselves. It doesn't work. It might work for some maybe small deals. Like, you know, I bought another two on my own, but then I was stuck. So that's why I had to find a partner.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Anthony Scandariato is the co-founder and owner of Red Knight Properties. He is a graduate of Cornell University with a bachelor's degree in applied economics and management, and also was a co-founder in Ridgeview Partners. Previously, he was the acquisitions and asset manager for Vision Properties, where he was directly involved in and responsible for sourcing, negotiation, and managing of the acquisition of $594 million of Class A office assets. But now he invests primarily in workforce housing. Listen in to what Anthony has to say about how they have scaled and why they have scaled their business the way they have. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sam. I really appreciate it.
Man, this is great. It's great to have you on. You know, the same questions I ask everybody who comes on is, you know, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Sure. So where I started, I'm currently the co-founder of Red Knight Properties, which is a boutique middle market real estate sponsor. We do property management as well, but we primarily invest in multifamily, mixed use, and a little bit of self-storage. We have about 340 units. I'm based in New Jersey, so on the East Coast, and within four states, and we're trying to expand to more. It's about $40 million in assets under management, and we're recording this. It's right in the beginning of 2021. So just to put that in perspective, that's who I am and what my company does. In terms of how I started, I actually worked for another real estate operator. It was actually on the Class A office, multi-tenant side, for about 5 years prior to really taking the launch for Red Knight on a full-time basis and order for it to really start to scale. So that's a little bit about my background and a little bit where I came from.
Right. And so did you launch Red Knight on your own, or did you start this with a group of partners, or how did you decide to make that jump from working for somebody else into doing kind of your own thing?
Yeah. So when I worked for the other company, I was in an acquisitions role, but I kind of saw everything, you know, so deal sourcing, due diligence, underwriting, capital raising, finding the lender. It was, you know, property management, asset management, and even some development. So I got to see everything. So while I was there, I was able to slowly kind of build my portfolio through the income from the W-2 on the side. It started out with a two family, which I still own today. And then I fixed and flipped another two family. And I started just doing smaller deals with my own funds that I got from my W-2. And then I started on the smaller end, brought on a partner, were able to flip a building. We hit like, you know, 40 IRR within like a year. So we were, you know, pretty excited about that. And that's when I was able to connect with my now business partner, Brian. I was referred to him by actually a colleague of mine who he was interested in actively getting involved in real estate. And so what we ended up doing was while I was still, you know, obviously at the W-2 on the side, buying together about 70 apartment units and, you know, retail in Northern New Jersey together, just in a very simple partnership format. And then once that portfolio kind of built up and we were able to refinance a couple of them and show some good returns and case studies, that's when we started to bring on additional partners, syndicating deals that are larger to, you know, obviously share the profits within a group.
Right. Talk to us about why you have elected to go to bigger assets.
Yeah, I think the scale, and obviously it's the title of your show, the scale is just much, much greater than owning, you know, why still own them. You know, I have 10 families in different towns. So I have one family in one town, one 15 minutes, 20 minutes away. You can't, it's not economical for you to really have someone full-time on the payroll at a 10-unit building because it's going to eat a lot of your cash flow. So much, you know, if you have, basically my story was I went from twos to twos to twos to tens to tens to 13 to 20 to 50 to 64 to 76 I bought another 50 in between that. So we're trying to do the larger transactions now just because we saw the value of scalability. We were able to self-manage as well, like I mentioned. So we were able to bring on an assistant to help us out with the day-to-day operations and, you know, obviously a leasing team and an accounting team. That's actually the most very, very important piece of it because we were doing all the accounting ourselves for up until 240 units. We were doing accounting ourselves and that was a nightmare. But we weren't able to afford an accountant. So now that we built the portfolio up, we're able to do those things and spread them out across multiple assets that we own. And it's much more affordable and economical.
Right, right. So you're really able to build a business, you know, where you can bake into the numbers all of those different hats that you maybe previously were wearing on the smaller. Do you find that it's easier now? Or is it, I mean, you know, has your job become easier or harder as you've scaled?
It's different. I wouldn't say it's easier or harder. It's more of working on the business rather than in the business. Even though I still get caught up on myself yesterday, the whole weekend, I was kind of working in the business again, which I got to stop doing that. But it's more of delegating, more of, you know, building your team and making sure everything gets done and, you know, becoming a leader. So it's a lot different than working on, you know, in the business. But we're still relatively, I would say, still a newer company. So you still want to be able to prove yourself and make sure the track record's going to be in the right direction. So if I still have to be in the business, fine for now. But, you know, it's going to be slowly gravitating towards being working on the business.
Right, right. And since we're on this theme, and I kind of like this, like, what are some of the lessons that you've learned, either good or bad, along the way as you've brought on team members? Like, what are some things that you've done right and maybe some things you've done wrong?
You know, it's always good to, we've had, you know, building managers, on-site managers where we didn't screen really properly and, you know, they were causing issues. Same with the leasing teams. I think the hiring process, and that wasn't something that I was really exposed to before because I really just wanted to do deals. And that's what I did at my old company. So we were just doing deals left and right. It wasn't like I was hiring people.
Right.
So I think that's a learning experience that we still are overcoming right now to make sure we hire the right person. And I think we did on a couple of these recent hires. It's definitely more challenging than we think, you know, and in terms of if, you know, anything we'd have to do again, like I said, it all comes down to building the team at the end of the day. So making sure that we have systems in place, you know, like we bought our first syndicated deal. This is going back now, so it's not that relevant, but we literally had Excel, right? So we had unit one, unit two, unit three, paid $500, $800, whatever it is. I didn't have a property management software. So make sure that that infrastructure is in line, you know, before you try to even start, because it's going to make life a lot easier if you do have those things in place. Even if they cost a little bit of money, you can still figure out ways to make it work.
Right, right. Yeah, that's an interesting point because a lot of us, and it, you know, you start off and you go, well, I don't want to spend, and I have no idea because I don't own any multifamily assets that require, you know, property management software. I have no idea what that costs, but I would imagine early on you're pinching pennies saying, all right, well, I don't want to invest in that because, you know, Excel is working.
Exactly. So, and I wouldn't say it's a fear. I just say it's a block that you have to just get out of your mind because there are a lot of affordable property management softwares out there. I mean, even the one that I'm using is very affordable, especially when you're spreading it across that many units now. It's like peanuts. So, you know, there are programs that are more affordable and some of them are free. So look for some free ones, at least to start out. Cozy is an example, although right. They, you know, they take money, you know, they make money on a float. So you're not going to get your rent for probably 15 days, you know, so, but there's ways to, that's what I used for my two families when I started out. So, but there's ways to make it work.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about the assets you guys have elected to invest in. I mean, one, I think it's very cool that you had such a great education, you know, on somebody else's dime to start out. Like, that's awesome. But then as you transitioned and then you found your partners, you said, okay, we're going to buy. And I think you said you guys invest in multifamily. You have some in self-storage and some mixed use. Is that right?
That's correct. Yep.
So how have you decided to invest in those different asset classes and which one are you focusing on primarily?
Primarily focusing on the multifamily. That's what we've been doing and what's been working for us, even looking forward into the new year. And we're investing, like I mentioned in the beginning, in more workforce housing, kind of C+, B- buildings, and, you know, B to almost even in A areas, but it's mostly suburban. So we have a little bit of infill. And what I mean by infill is just, you know, small town, you know, maybe in the downtown or very close proximity to mass transit, walkability, you know, other factors as well. So we're investing, a lot of the properties are garden style too. So we're talking 2 to 3 story walk-up buildings. I don't really have elevator, you know, that I have to worry about. And it's, you know, it's affordable apartments. There's still an issue in this country of, you know, not enough supply to meet the demand for, you know, affordable apartments because construction costs have been rising. I mean, there's obviously many different factors that play into that. So we're really going in and really trying to improve communities that, you know, we have, sometimes we buy 1960s product and it needs a lot of work. Maybe there's some structural issues, but that's what we're good at, identifying those problems and then fixing them through the value add program. And then, you know, obviously turning the building around, you know, increasing the rents to market, you know, decreasing the expenses. And then typically we look to refinance and then hold it for a little while, or, you know, depending upon what type of number we'll get, we'll sell. But we generally like to refinance because it's very tax efficient. So that's what we've been focusing on. As you mentioned, we have a little bit of mixed use. And by mixed use, I mean apartments above, ground level retail. We don't have much of that. I'd say 5% of the portfolio is mixed use. And then the same thing with the storage. We happened to just buy a multifamily building that had storage units with it. So it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to go buy a self-storage deal. It wasn't like that. So we're primarily focused on the multifamily, the workforce housing, affordable segment.
Right. Now that's interesting. Walk me through this, because this is, you know, you mentioned bringing the units up to market rent. How does one go about, and I'm not shooting holes in your plan here because I really want to learn, like, how does one go about buying a building, you know, 1960s or 70s building, do a value add, and yet still retain the workforce housing kind of price range? Like, how does that work?
Yes, we're part of the investment criteria is to buy from motivated sellers, from long-term ownership, you know, a lot of deferred maintenance, a lot of cosmetic improvements that they haven't made. Sometimes we've bought buildings from people that they've owned it for 30, 50 years.
Wow.
So the rents that they're charging hasn't really even caught up with inflation since they bought the building. So they're below market to begin with in the affordable segment. I'll just give an example. You know, we bought our syndicated deal. I think the average rent was $850 across 1s, 2s, and 3s. And now the average rent's $1,300 at that building, just because that's what the market is. So we're generally looking, not necessarily looking to take, you know, the product to an A. We want to still stay in the workforce segment, but still be in the price point where there is that affordability factor. And we always look at comparables too in the area. And we try to, you know, be a little bit below comparables too, if we can. But it all comes down to the buy. What basis are you buying the building at? What cap rate? You know, what, you know, below replacement costs? You know, it's all those different factors always weigh into our decisions.
Right. And it sounds like there's opportunity in that space where you guys are. Why are other investors not clamoring for this same asset class?
There's a lot. There's a lot now. I think we saw, you know, in 2020, and, you know, with coronavirus, and we're still, you know, we're still dealing with it. You know, a lot of people were scared that collections were going to drop significantly. They have dropped a little bit because, you know, more people are out of work. However, it's a different story when it's $3,000 one-bedroom apartment versus $1,000 one-bedroom apartment, especially with all the government programs that have come out, you know, the stimulus, you know, even if they're on unemployment, you know, there were issues with collections for a Class A product. Again, $3,000 one-bedroom apartment, as an example, you know, is some of the vacancy rates now and the rent decreases, especially if you look at a market like Manhattan. I mean, Manhattan went down, I think, like 25% in rent, asking rents, and they're giving out concessions like crazy. So it's just not, it's just, you know, that type of higher end product. And even those gateway cities, we just always stayed away from because we knew something was going to happen in 2020. We didn't know it would be a health and economic crisis. But we knew an economic one was at least coming. So we tried to position ourselves in the best way we could.
Right, right. And it sounds like, you know, that's probably a good place to be, because I don't see the needs in that department are not going down. So you guys, you know, investing in that, right, in that particular class, I think is that is only going to grow.
Yeah, we agree with that. And, you know, we're seeing it now where more people are holding off to buy homes. It's, you know, even though rates are so low, millennials are still holding off, you know, renters. I think the renter pool in the entire country went up like 10% in 2020, wow, maybe 14%. I'm trying to remember those. But yeah, it's, and that's all on the affordable side. It's not luxury, you know, to different business. So,
right. That's fascinating. Hey, let's jump into the final four here. If you were to distill everything you know, and you were going to give one piece of advice to an aspiring investor, what would that one piece of advice be?
Don't be afraid to, if you're starting out, don't be afraid to partner.
That's a great one. That's a great one. Let's dig into that for a quick second. How does somebody find a partner?
Many different ways. I mean, you can find them on the internet. You can find them through your relationships, your network, probably someone you know and you trust would be preferable. Don't be afraid to partner. I see a lot of people that try to get in the industry and they want to do everything themselves. It just doesn't work. Mm-hmm. It might work for some maybe small deals. Like, you know, I bought another two on my own, but then I was stuck. So that's why I had to find a partner.
That's awesome.
So what's find one thing, it early.
Yeah. What's one thing you're currently doing to stay on top of your game?
We never had team management before. So we just downloaded, I'm putting in a lot of different infrastructure. So Microsoft Teams, we never had like a project management type of software. It's always been emails back and forth. So trying to make sure that we set that up moving forward into 2021, make sure everything's more streamlined.
Right. No, that's great. That's great. Yeah, you're right. Because in the email sequence chain, things can often get lost into who said who's doing what when, and going back and finding those can be a bit of a disaster. When it comes to giving back, what is one way you're making the world a better place?
Yeah, I am a part of the Habitat for Humanity organization. So I like to go volunteer whenever there's a need to build housing. So I help with that. Wasn't a lot of it in 2020, but hopefully in 2021 will be more.
Right. That's awesome. That's awesome. And Anthony, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
You can actually, there's a special report you can download from our site. It's called How to Leave Your 9-to-5 Through Financial Independence. So if you actually just go to our site, redknightproperties.com, you can click that, just type your name and email in, and then you'll get the copy of that book. And then all my contact information will be on there.
That's awesome. And that's Red Knight. And Knight is spelled as in Knight, as in shining armor, K-N-I-G-H-T. Red Knight.
Exactly. Knight with a K. Yeah. Redknightproperties.com. And you can find me on every social media platform except TikTok. I haven't got one yet.
That's awesome. Anthony, hey, thanks so much for your time today. I certainly appreciate it.
Thank you, Sam. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.